get no hurt, mister. No, no, no. I said, yeah.
I said, yeah.
And connection with the host, Pastor Rowan Cameron, on this Wednesday night. The second day of December in the year for all our 2020. We continue to give the King of Glory praise and the honor and the glory. We say, Eternal Father, bless our land. Guard us with thy mighty hand. Keep us free from evil powers. Be our light through countless hours. So lead us, great defender. Grant your wisdom from above. Justice should be ours forever. Jamaica, land we love. Continue to trust in the true and living God. But there is none like him. On a day when pandemic continues to rage, over 64 million has been affected worldwide. $1.4 million has died already from this pandemic, coronavirus. And in the United States of America, 14 million and counting has been affected. 176,000 has died. It's a country where the president, sitting president, President Trump, has refused to acknowledge that he has lost the election, beaten very badly by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. But we know on the 20th of January next year, we will witness this inauguration where Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be sworn in. And Donald Trump days will be no more. Tonight is very special because it was yesterday that America's rose apart. And I thought they say it was 65 years ago. The woman by the name of Rosa Parks who have had enough. Some try to say that she was tired, but she said it was just a normal day's work for her. So she was not extremely tired. But she have had enough of going to the back of the bus. She have had enough of getting up for white. She have had enough blacks being treated as animals. So she refused to get up. It was on the 1st of December, 1955. So we're going to be talking about this woman and talking about black women generally, their achievements, their accomplishments, that it has been so much but because of the color of their skin. They seldom seems to be elevated in the eyes of the public where they are supposed, where they rightfully belong. But this black woman rose apart, showing us that we shall overcome in the midst of a civil rights in 1955. And Jim Crow was prevalent. She stood out by sitting down. We have seen in 2020, November, where the ticket of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, Democrats, won the election in America. $80 million and counting. Never has America seen such a massive voter turnout. And it has to be contributed to the blacks, because it was Joe Biden and Kamala and even former President Barack Obama was telling people, go out and vote. And even before the election won, President Trump was saying, if he didn't win, it would be a fraud. That's the same thing has happened. He have lost this election decisively. And he's still saying it's a fraud. And he have wimps behind him like the majority in the House, led by Connell. Also men like Giuliani, still supporting this foolishness about fraud. The president has even gone so far as firing Chris Krebs. You're the man.
I don't know.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know why.
Yes, studio, we are. We are back. We had a slight break transmission, but I'm hearing you loud and clear with the man Alton Ellis. But we will continue where we left off, because as I said before, we are highlighting this great woman, Rosa Parks, who in 1955 it was an historic occasion, the 1st of December 1955 Rosa Parks decided that enough is enough. And she refused to get up. Because it was a law at that time that the seats were for whites, and if they were empty, then the blacks should be allowed to sit. She said, no, the only tired I was tired of giving in. So they tried to put a spin to it, said why Rosa Parks did not get up on that day in. And that first day of December 1955 was because she was tired. But she corrected the naysayers by saying, no, the only tired I was tired of giving up, of giving in. Today we have outstanding black woman. We have come a long way from Rosa Parks. So now we have Kamala Harris, who is vice president elect. And whether President Trump wants to acknowledge it or not, January 20th, she and president elect Joe Biden will be sworn in. And man, what a celebration that will be. The world will no longer have to put up with Donald Trump. Because we know he hates black. Regardless of what he says, he is a racist. He is a racist. It is said that 60 years ago, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on a bus in Montgomery, that's in Alabama. Her courageous act is now American legend. She's a staple of elementary school curricula, and was the second most popular historical figure named by American students in a survey when Republican presidential contenders were asked to pick a woman they wanted picture on the $10 bill. The largest number of votes went to Rosa Parks. Americans are convinced they know this civil rights era. In textbook documentaries, she is the meek seamstress gazing quietly out of a bus window, a symbol of progress and how far we have come. When she died in 2005, The word quiet was used in most of our obituaries and eulogies. We have grown comfortable with Park, who is often seen but rarely heard. That image of Parks as stripper of political substance, her life issue of being rebellious, as she put it, comes true decisively in the recently opened Rosa Parks collection at the Library of Congress. It features previously unseen personal writing. Unseen letters, speech, notes, financial and medical records, political documents, and decades of photographs. Parks was a seasoned freedom fighter who had grown up in a family that supported Marcus Garvey and who married an activist for the Scottsboro Boys. She joined the Montgomery chapter of the NAACP in 1943, becoming branch secretary. She spent the next decade pushing for voters' registration, seeking justice for black victims of white brutality and sexual violence, supporting wrongfully accused black men, and pressing for a desegregation of schools and public spaces. Committed to both the power of organized nonviolent direct action and the moral rights of self-defense, she called Malcolm X her personal hero. The Rosa Parks collection, which opened in February, reveal how broadly Parks has been distorted and misunderstood. Her papers languished unseen for years, following the debt because dispute over her estate, the hefty price the auction house put on the archive, and its refusal to allow any scholars to assess the papers before the sale. Last year, the Howard Buffett Foundation bought the archive and gave it to the Library of Congress on a 10-year loan. So here we're looking at this great woman who won the first of December 1955, refused to get up. And today we are so glad that she did. Though Parks later wrote an autobiography, her notes from decades earlier gave a more personal sense of her thoughts. In numerous accounts, she highlighted the difficulty of navigating a segregated society and the immense pressure put on black people not to dissent. She wrote that it took a major mental acrobatic feat to survive as a black person in the United States, highlighting that it was not easy to remain rational and normal mentally in such a setting. She refused to normalize the ability to function under American racism. I'm sure Rosa Parks, when she looked at the result of the election that took place in America on the 3rd of November, she must be rejoicing. Because that same racism that she has felt 1955, it was again rampant, and it is still rampant in the United States of America. And President Donald Trump has made it no better. Matter of fact, he has made it worse for black people. And I am so glad that the Democrats have won. President-elect Joe Biden, in his victory speech, said that the blacks supported him They have his back, and he has pledged to support the blacks, and we are glad. How did President Trump treat the blacks? Not even acknowledge them, in most cases. He called African countries S-hole countries. Mexican, he referred to them as rapists. And when the blacks riot in the States, when George Floyd was murdered by a white police, can't regard for the life of a black man. I am so glad that President Trump has lost this election. And he's trying all manner of evil, he and his team. They are lying, they are scheming. But we see yesterday, Attorney General Bill Barr came out and said he has found no evidence of fraud. And the sad thing about it is that while President Trump and his legal team, when speaking to the media, they are claiming fraud. When they face the courts in the United States, they do not present that same case. So they are speaking one thing out of their mouth when they are speaking to the media. But when they are presenting their case to the judges in the courts, they have written something different. And when the judges ask them, are they saying that it is fraud? Giuliani bluntly replied, no, it's not about fraud. And I'm saying, doesn't those 78 million people who are going behind President Trump realize that he is lying? When Hillary lost this election in 2016, they could have pursued this route and delay in conceding, but they humbled themselves. And in 2016, you have seen clips of how Fox TV treated the Democrats. They call them crying babies and all manner of evil. Now the shoes is on the other foot. And what are they saying? This is the kind of connection we are celebrating today. But as I said, it was yesterday that in 1955, the 1st of December, when this great black woman stood up long before Martin Luther gave this speech. She was before Malcolm X. She decided that enough is enough. And this great black woman, Rosa Parks, she said, for her, the frustration began in childhood. When even her beloved grandmother worried about her talking bigoted to white folks, she recounts how her grandmother grew angry when a young Rosa Parks recounted picking up a brick to challenge a white bully. Rosa told her grandmother, I would rather be lynched than live to be mistreated and not to be allowed to say I don't like it. Parks viewed the power of speaking back in the face of racism and oppression as fundamental, and saw that denying that right was the key to the functioning of white power. Parks' determination never to accept it, even if it must be endured, led her to search her way of working for freedom and first class citizenship. Parks carried that determination into adulthood. though she made clear the impossible mental state is required. She lyrically described the difficulty of being a rebel, the way black children were conditioned early to learn their places, and the toll it took on her personally. There is just so much hurt, disappointment, and oppression. One can take the line between reason and madness grows thinner. The longest piece of collection and an 11-page document describing a near-rape incident, Parks decisively uses the power of speaking back. When the document became public in 2011, there was controversy around its release and question about whether it would work. It was the work of fiction, but it does not appear that Parks wrote fiction. And details of the story correspond to Parks' life. Like the narrator of the story, Parks was doing some domestic work during the Scott Barrow trial. During her late teens, in 1931, it's written in the first person. Though the narrator is unnamed in the account, a young Rosa is threatened with assault by white neighbors of her employer, who was let into the house by a black worker, Sam, the heavy set white man she aptly called Mr. Charlie. And this was a term black people of the era used for white people and their arbitrary power. Gets a drink, put his hand on her waist, and attempt to make a move on her. Furious and terrified, she resolved to resist. I was ready and willing to die, but give any consent, never, never, never. When Mr. Charlie said he'd gotten permission from Sam to be with her, she replied that Sam didn't own her and that she hated the both of them, and that nothing Mr. Charlie could do would get her consent. If she wanted to kill me and rape a dead body, Parks wrote, he was welcome, but he would have to kill me first. It is significant that Parks' philosophy of resistance is framed through an experience of sexual aggression. She was committed to women's rights throughout her life, from working to get justice for a black woman who had been raped, such as Gertrude Perkins and Reese Taylor, to defending the right of women prisoners when Joanne Little, a 20-year-old black woman serving a 7-year sentence for a robbery, killed a white guard who sexually assaulted her. Parks co-founded Detroit Joanne's Little Defense Committee. Little was acquitted, becoming the first woman in United history to successfully use self-defense against sexual assault in a homicide case. Parks used his power of speaking back again in the evening of December 1st, 1955. When bus driver James Blake ordered her to give up her seat to a white passenger, and she refused. Blake chose not simply to evict her from the bus, as he had done in the past, but to have her arrested, calling attention to the larger power in the system. Parks questioned the arresting officer. Why do you push us around? One officer answered, I don't know. But the law is the law, and you are under arrest. After years of activism, Parks had reached her breaking point on the bus that December evening. I had been pushed around all my life and felt at this moment that I couldn't take it anymore. Her writings revealed the burden that this decade of political activism, which with a small cadre of other Montgomery NAACP members had produced little change. And had been on her spirit, describing the darkest closet of my mind, she wrote about the loneliness of being a rebel. I am nothing. I belong nowhere. Repeatedly in her writings, Parks underscored the difficulty in mobilizing in the years before her bus protest. People blamed the NAACP for not winning cases when they did not support it and give strength enough. She found it demoralizing. If understandable, that in the decade before the boycott, the masses seemed not to put forth too much effort to struggle against the status quo. Nothing of those who challenged the racial order like she did were labeled radical, sorehead, agitators, troublemakers. Indeed, Rosa Parks was rebated and received death threats and hate mails for years in Montgomery and in Detroit for her movement work. Though the righteousness of her action may seem self-evident today, at the time, those who challenge segregation, like those who challenge racial injustice today, were often treated as unstable, unruly, and potentially dangerous by many white people and some black people. Her writing shows how she struggled with feeling isolated and crazy before and even during the boycott. In one piece of writing, she explained how she felt completely alone and desolate, as if I was descending in a black and bottomless chasm. Despite the boycott's successful end, Parks' family still faced death threat and could not find steady work. In August 1957, they left Montgomery for Detroit, where her brother and cousins lived. The promised land that wasn't, as she called it. There in Detroit, she remained active in various movements for racial, social, criminal, and global justice in the decade to come. Mountains of flyer programs, letters, mailing, meetings, agendas, and conference programs documents the span of her political activities. Though very few writings have survived, were personal papers from these later years. You see, I have to pause and where she said, "Promised land." That was in 1957. That was the conclusion that Rosa Parks came to. Promised land. That wasn't. It was Barack Obama who was just written a book called The Promised Land. And he has talked about
his first year in the White House. Barack Obama was the first black man to be president of the United States of America. And we hail him. But we continue on Rosa Parks, this great woman, this great leader who has decided that enough is enough. And on the 1st of December 1955, she accomplished a remarkable feat. The few that remain tell us that her radicalism never weakened. Freedom fighters never retired. She noted in a testimonial for a fellow activist, as she had for decades, Parks drew sustenance from the militancy and spirit of young people working in and alongside the growing black power movement, understanding the impact that years of activism with limited result can have on person. She continued calling for a rapid and radical change. And in a 1973 letter posted at the Afro-American Museum in Detroit, she noted the impact that years of white violence and intransigence had on the younger generation. The attempt to solve our racial problems nonviolently was discredited in the eyes of many by the hardcore segregationists who made peaceful demonstration countless acts of violence and bloodshed. Time is running out for a peaceful solution. It may even be too late to save our society from total destruction. Writing this after what many marks of the successful end of the modern civil rights movement, Parks clearly believed that the struggle was not over. In the 1970s and 80s and 90s, she continued to press for change in the criminal justice system, in school and housing inequality, in jobs and welfare policy, in foreign policy. She worked in the U.S. Representative John Conyers' office and spoke out against Clarence Thomas' nomination to the Supreme Court. Dismayed by his poor record on civil rights, sometime in the 1990s, an older Parks doodled on a paper bag, preserved in the collection. The struggle continues. The struggle continues. The struggle continues. Much of the memorializing of the Montgomery bus boycott and the civil rights movement misses this side of Parks. Instead, we have become a contender to celebrate her quiet bus protest as an historic triumph in a movement that has long since run its course. But listening to Rosa Parks forces us to reconsider our view not only of our civil rights history, but also the demand of our civil rights present. We are forced to reckon with the fact that today's rebel may be tomorrow's heroes. And indeed, we are celebrating the work that this great black woman has done. She stood up, fought against injustice. She fought against racism. And it's the same thing that we must continue this struggle against men like President Trump, who has no regard for blacks. It was a Marcus Garvey
Those writing and movements, influence of Rosa Parks. It is the same Marcus Garvey who the United States of America has charged him for federal crimes, mail fraud, and those charges still hang over Marcus Garvey's grave to this day. When will it be removed? The man was treated with great injustice. And you tell me something now. General Flynn lied to the FBI 2 times. It is on record. He admitted that he lied. And the president of the United States of America, Donald Trump, pardon General Flynn, who admitted that he's a liar. And Marcus Garvey, who saw the injustice, who experienced the injustice and racism, just like what Rosa Parks experienced. Another criminal from the FBI by the name of Edgar Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover. He was the one who had these charges laid against Marcus Garvey. Who will speak out? Let me tell you something. If we don't know our issue, we are bound to repeat it. How many Rosa Parks will rise up? How many will speak about the injustice of Donald Trump, who have no regard for women? Calling the Clarendon Connection, we celebrate them all. Celebrate the woman. It was Eddie Fitzroy in one of his music said, "She's a precious, precious. She's a princess black. She's always tougher than a rock." And then Tyrus Riley said, "She is royal." We have some wonderful black woman that we want to highlight this evening. Marcia Martin. She's the youngest executive producer in history. She says Marcia Martin started her role as Diane Johnson on the ABC TV comedy series in 2014 when she was just 10. 2 years later, she starred in her first film, An American Girl Story, Melody 1963, Love Has to Win, set in Detroit during the Civil Rights Movement. She starred in Little for Universal Pictures, and at just 13, she was named an executive producer, making her the youngest in history. She's also producing and acting in another film, Amari and the Knight Brothers. In an interview with the LA Times, she gave her advice to others wanting to follow a similar path. Believe in yourself. Push you to the highest limit. Be confident that you can do it. If you take that one push to do it, then God got the rest. Just leave it up to him, she said. The other one is Lizzo. He says Lizzo won the most nominated artist for the 2020 Grammys. The other great black woman is Felix. Alison Felix. He says Felix is one of the most decorated track and field athletes in history with 9 Olympic medals. A record she shares with Jamaica's sprinter Merlin Otte. 6 of Felix's Olympic medals or gold, the most of any track and field star. And Merlin could have won more, but Merlin has so many brands in her arsenal. And this is due to the fact that most of the athletes that Merlin ran against, they were under drugs. They were drugs up. That's why Flo Jo was always winning her. And those girls from Germany, whether the name Jessica and all those girls, they were well under drugs. Merlin was running clean. I hail Merlin tonight. Powerful woman. South Sudanese Australian supermodel, adult, a kitch, boy. And it says, a former child of Refugee Yourself, 20-year-old Akich, was recently featured on Time 100 Next List. The only model this year, she made her international debut walking for St. Laurent during Paris Fashion Week. And in 2019, she was named Model of the Year at the British Fashion Award. In an interview with Vogue UK, she spoke on what it means to be a refugee. You don't wake up thinking, I'm going to be a refugee, she said. The only difference between a refugee and someone who grew up in the Western world is that we are forced out of our own country, out of our own homes, because of fear, not because of choice. The other famous black woman is Lena Waithe, who was the first black woman to win Primetime Emmy for outstanding writing in a comedy series. And her latest movie is out in theater. Waithe is a screenwriter, producer, and activist. She starred in and wrote for Aziz Ansari Netflix series, Master of None, winning a Primetime Emmy. The episode for which she won was loosely based on her experience coming out as a lesbian to her mother. Raquel Willis is the executive editor of Out magazine, the first transgender woman ever to hold a leadership position at the publication of its 26-year history. Rihanna is the world's richest female musician, and she's valued at $600 million. Not only a musician, Riri is a mogul. Her incredible success brand, Fenty Beauty and Savage X Fenty, has made her a fortune. And for a good reason, both brands focus on inclusion of all sizes, shape, culture, gender, identity, and more. Our beauty for all. Our Fenty brand foundation comes in 40 different shades, from light dark, a huge step for our representation in generally whitewashed beauty industry. All women deserve to feel beautiful, and all women deserve to have a choice and an option when they go to the makeup counter, she told Entertainment Tonight. Last year also saw a teaser for a new album from the artist. So fingered crossed. We'll be hearing more from her soon. Nafisa Williams is TV's first black lesbian superhero. Then we have the founder of the Me Too movement, Anna Burke, as she continues to campaign against sexual violence. It says a civil rights activist from the Bronx, New York, Burke founded the Me Too campaign in 2006 when she used the phrase to illustrate the ubiquitous nature of sexual violence. In 2017, when Alyssa Milano retweeted the hashtag Me Too, the movement exploded, becoming synonymous with the Harvey Weinstein case. Burke was recognized as one of the silence breaker name as Time Person of the Year in 2017. But in a recent Time article, the importance of political candidates recognizing sexual assault, candidates have a responsibility to address and rampant sexual violence that permeates all society system and structure, including government, she wrote. So these are some of the famous women that we have in our society today. And the last one that I want to spoke about is Dr. Shirley Jackson. And she is the first black woman to lead a top-ranked research university. A theoretical physicist, Jackson was the first black woman to earn a PhD from MIT and the second black woman to earn a doctorate in physics in U.S. history. In 2015, President Barack Obama selected her to receive the Nation Medal of Science. This has been the Clarendon. This is the Clarendon Connection, and we close out tonight. And we're going to be back next week as we continue to highlight these great women. And we got to know, we got to celebrate them, because they have done a great deal for blacks. We started out with Rosa Parks. As we continue to celebrate these great women, and we end up with Dr. Shirley Jackson. This is the Clarendon Connection, your host, Pastor Cameron. And we see you next week, same time, same place. Over and out, back to you, studio. And we just say, may God continue to bless Jamaica land we love.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.